हरिः सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सलि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. So Sukadeva Goswami's understanding of the tenth topic, the absolute truth, is the shelter of all shelters, who is his own shelter. Summary of 59. In the previous section, Srila Jiva Goswami showed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Ashraya Tattva, or supporting element, even from the aggregate point of view. Now he further explains that the Lord is the support of each individual, even in his day-to-day sensory experiences. Right, so here in Ashraya Tattva, one is Ashraya Tattva, meaning the Tattva Ashraya, but he is also Tattva, meaning whatever there is to discuss, it's him.
Yes.
Right? So you have both. 59. And to give within the process of maintenance a clear indication of the identity of the shelter, Ashraya, the divisions of Adiatma and so on are described in the final two of the seven verses. This is done through a meditation on manifestedly visible phenomena involving, again, the individual living entities, vyasti. So, okay, this is verses 8 and 9 from the Bhagavatam. The individual person possessing different instruments of sense is called the adiatmic person, and the individual controlling deity of the senses is called the adidaivic person. The embodiment seen on the eyeballs is called the adibhautik person. Right? So in other words, the person seeing is the adiatmic. What he's seeing is the adibhautik. That the person in charge of that power of seeing, that's the adidaivik.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because adiatmic is always yourself, adibhautik is the other, and adidaivik is what's controlling.
Right? Yes.
But this principle, it applies in everything.
Yes.
Right. It also is one of those principles that goes throughout everything. In the absence of any one of these, we do not perceive the other two. He who knew all three is the Supreme Soul, independent of all these. He is his own support and the true Ashraya. Bhagavatam 2.10, 8-9. Right. So then he's not the Adidaivik, that's the Devata that is empowered with that potency. So he is seeing all three of these. He is separate from all three of these.
Yes.
Right? Because
yes.
We, if one of them is missing, then the other two is not seen. Right? Means, how do you say? If we're not perceiving, if we're not looking, then you're not going to see someone else or understand the potency behind it. Does that make sense? The power of seeing. Right? You have the power of seeing, but without the person seeing.
Then you can't manifest.
Yeah, I mean, in other words, you need all three.
Yes.
But the point is you can't, these can't function without each other, but the Lord is independent of these three.
So, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
he,
yeah.
Because he is the person seeing.
Yes.
What he sees is himself, and that potency to see is himself.
Yes.
Right? So there are various aspects of himself. But for us, they're not aspects of us.
Yes.
They're aspects of the Lord. So therefore, we fall into one of these.
Yes. Yes.
We're either the one seeing, the one seen, or the demigod that is controlling
yes.
the seeing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And even the demigod controlling the seeing, still, he is then adiatmic in his own seeing, and what he's seeing is adibhautik.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like that. And ultimately, that potency that he is seeing by is coming from the Lord.
Who is aloof?
Yes. The Adiatmic Purusha, footnote 26, the Adiatmic Purusha is the same as the Adidaiva Purusha. And the source for the distinction between these two is called the Adibhautika Purusha. Srila Prabhupada explains how. Each and every individual in the material world is controlled by the higher demigods. For example, we have our senses, but the senses are controlled by superior controlling deities. We cannot see without light, and the supreme controller of light is the sun. The sun god is in the sun planet, and we, the individual human beings or any other being on this earth, are all controlled by the sun god as far as our eyes are concerned. Similarly, all the senses we have are controlled by the superior demigods, who are also as much living entities as we are, but one is empowered while the other is controlled. Right? So I'm saying the demigod is empowered by the Lord to take care of seeing, and we are controlled by that demigod in the process of seeing. Yes? That which distinguishes the controller and control, i.e. the material body, is called the adibhautik person, purusha. The body is sometimes called purusha, as confirmed in the Vedas, in the following hymn. Sava esha purushon na rasa mayaha. This body is called the anarasa embodiment. This body depends on food. Right? Anna means food. The living entity which is embodied does not eat anything. However, because the owner is spirit in essence, the material body requires a placement of matter for the wearing and tearing of the mechanical body. Therefore, the distinction between the individual living entity and the controlling planetary deities is in the anarasa-maya body. The sun may have a gigantic body, and the man may have a smaller body, but all these visible bodies are made of matter. Nonetheless, the sun god and the individual person, who are related as the controller and controlled, are the same spiritual parts and parcels of the Supreme Being. And it is the Supreme Being who places different parts and parcels in different positions. And thus the conclusion is that the Supreme Person is the shelter of all. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.8 purport. Right? So the same principle. Right? The acharyas all see in this way. Right? That's why we're going through it, because it may be, how do you say, technical, but the point is there's a point to be seen here. Right? You know, and technically seeing is what it looks like. So here also then it's interesting, because we'll take it that, you know, Adiatmik is who's seeing, right? Adibhautik is the control of that seeing. I mean, except Adidaiva. And the Adibhautik is what is seen, so we'll take that as the other person.
Yes.
Which, you know, in general application would be the case. Right?
Yes.
But we also have the element, I hope, that the body is the Adibhautik, because the one seeing is the soul.
Yes.
You understand? So the soul is seeing, so what is he seeing? The body. Because just like you can see someone else, you can also see your own body. Right? So the body is what's being seen, the material elements in between. So in other words, there's the jiva, there's the Lord's potency, and then there's the bodies that make the difference in the position of the living entities. Right? Because the demigod is also an adiatmik. Right? But you know, he's positioned, he's in controller, and the jiva is controlled. The difference is the kind of body they have. The controller has the demigod body, right? And the, you know, the controlled has the human body. Does that make sense? Yeah? So here then, the principle is that there's the Lord who is the shelter of all, and then there's those who are sheltered, the jivas. Within, though, there's those who are empowered to work on behalf of the Lord, and those who are controlled by those persons, on, you know, by the Lord. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the body is the thing in between. That's why this Adiatmik, Adidaivik, Adibhautik has some very interesting elements to it, because it looks one way, and it is that way, but at the same time it has this other that seems to be just the opposite. It's just depending on what level you're looking at it. So it's a very sophisticated system. We'll see as we go through, when we get into creation, when they actually decide, then this comes up a lot. What's the Adiatmik, what is the Adidaivik, what's the Adibhautik? Right, so what's the controller, what's the controlled, and what's in between? What connects them? You know, and so that whole point of controlling, controlled, and in between, that's all controlled by the Lord. He's the shelter of that. Okay? I mean, the position of controlling, he's the shelter of that. He's the shelter of those who are controlled. He's shelter of that potency that is brings them together. Right? So does that make sense? So then also you get here the adiatmic being the in the sambandha principle, right? Mm-hmm. The adibhotic, adidaivic being in the prayojana principle, the adibhotic being in the abhideya, because that's what connects, right? Because you have the two. Yes. It's like you have the masculine and feminine, then you have the other two, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could, in this way, because we're trying to see, we're in this junior position, control, that puts us in the feminine position. The demigods and the masculine, but the body is what and was what connects them,
yes.
Right? So the body is what holds the senses,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. You can take everything and put it all together, right? So this is also a form of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. It's just more of a, like a Vedic kind of approach. Yeah. So it has this kind of more formality, but at the same time. The overlaps are very, very great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the element is in the Vedic, the overlaps, it's like one thing can be both. It's just depending on which perspective, so you have to learn all these different kind of elements, how to perceive them from the different perspectives. And so then, to make that easier, then the Puranic then gives it examples of people applying it.
Yes.
You know, does that make sense? Just like the classical, I mean, the Vedic Sanskrit is harder to grasp what is being said, the classical Sanskrit is easier. You know, does that make sense? Same as just thinking about it in music. You have the Vedic verses and the samans, right, that are the musical elements that are the basis of all that music. But that then comes out into what's called jatis, because there's the mechanics of it. You have the notes where they're placed according to the Samaveda, Veda, right? Then if you do according to what's called, I can't remember. The West, they have a thing, but it's not so. They use it differently. You have, let's say, the scale is working on the first note, and then you shift it up to the second note, right? But then in the Western usage of it, you just are, you know, in the general usage of it, you keep the notes in the same position. You know what I mean? The space between them is the same. So all it does is it's the same thing, just a little higher. And you can just keep going up in the same way. Right? But, yes, that's an application. But in the science of it, that's an art. But in that's all it is it's lower, you want it higher. So you just shift everything up. But the actual point is that when you shift it one note up, you keep the spaces between the notes as is originally there. So it changes the actual pattern, you know, of the spaces between the notes. And so each one you shift that up, that way you can get seven of those. You understand? So those, and now you have all the shrutis, which are 22, because each one of them has its different, how you say? Positions that it can have, depending upon what it is. You start off with sa, the first note, it can have four positions in quarter notes. Right? Re can have three, ga can have two, and 4-3-2. Yeah, then it has four again, pa has four, then da has three, and ni has two. Right? So that's in sa, grama. That's in the grama, or the group of sa. Now when you move it up to ma, you leave it in the same position. So then ma, it has four, but then it goes 4-4-3-2-4-3-2. It's a different pattern. You understand? And then you have this thing where you can shift it like that. So it becomes very, very technical. So the jatis, they work on this. They're coming from that. They're just mechanics of that. Yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying? And so then from that, those who are very expert can use them and maintain the they understand what it is, the essence of it. And so though it technically doesn't have much rules in the way of, it can be used any you can use any form to present it. It doesn't matter. It's not that one note's prominent or the other, but you know the mood, so you'll use it that way. But it becomes very, very difficult. Even though it's so simple, it's more difficult. You know what I'm saying? Like being a Mayavadi is very easy. Being a Gaudiya Vaishnava is more difficult. Our system is so much easier. That's why it's so much more difficult. Right? You know, it's just engage whatever you have in Krishna's service. That's it. No, but then how to do that, and then what about this, and then what about that? And, you know, it just goes on and on because it's so simple, it's just hard to apply, right, because of our conditioning. So therefore, Narad Muni gives the ragas, means it's already been worked out. So you already know, this note is prominent, this is that, and you'll get these moods. So it doesn't matter, because if you have 18 jatis, that means you can get all the moods out of them, depending on which aspect you bring out. So you understand within that masculine, feminine, all these different things. But then Narad Muni gives the ragas, so therefore it's divided. Here are the masculine ragas, here's the feminine ragas, here's the... Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore it means this adiyatmik, adidaivik, adibhautik. Then it has that complexity that is there. But then, you know, generally when we're discussing, we, you know, use other applications. But the point is that it's an advantage because then you can see it from different lights. As soon as you adjust one thing, just like we apply it to us, it works in one way. You apply it to the demigod, it works in a different way. You know what I'm saying? Just like I'm seeing you, I'm the adiyatmik, you're the adibhautik. But you see me, you're the adiyatmik, I'm the adibhautik. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that it shifts so easily. So, you know, as we get used to this, because we'll come up with it, I think, you know, going through the, I think at least creation is done at least three times before we finish the sixth canto. Right? So we'll get used to it after a while. Takes a few years, but, you know, we'll get it.
Worth it.
Yeah. It's like now we can relate with some Bandhavide and Prajna, you know, Sankarshan Abhibhu. That, you know, comes very easy. So this will also come. And then it will be less boring. Yes, because now it's like,
Can we say that not only the world is a shrine according to Adiyatma, but also the divine?
Means he's the source of these three. Why they work is because they're part of him. But he, as a person, is still separate. You know, just like we were saying before, is Brahman and Paramatma. Then are the Lord. And so in this way, he's pervading everything, controlling everything, but at the same time, he as a person is still separate from all that. So that's the important element, because we're bringing out here, is because Bhagavatam's about Bhagavan. Right? So you have to be able to see how he's the shelter of everything, so nothing can function without him. At the same time, he is the, how do you say it? He is beyond it. You know what I'm saying? That's the important element. Because what's beyond is the person. The person, the personality, what he likes to do, his friends, what they do when they hang out, what they talk, how they talk. You know? That's the thing that's beyond. But that only becomes interesting if we're working on the transcendental platform. Right? Because that's the what we were saying this morning, is that the queens, all the different ladies of the palace, because it says ladies of the palace, it doesn't necessarily mean the queens, because they're talking about the queens, you know, Dwarka. So they may be queens, they may be maidservants and all these things, but they hang out together and talk, you know, and there can be thousands of them. One queen can have thousands of maidservants, right? So then, yeah, and now you're talking about, how you say it? Draupadi being the empress of the world, so she may have a few more thousand. Right? So the whole thing is about that person. But to get to that, we have to appreciate and be able to separate that he is beyond, at the same time he's not. Because then everything is, it's him. You know, it's just like, let us say the other day we're discussing, okay, if Krishna's involved in everything, he's controlling and everything's from him, then when things go wrong, it's actually him. You understand? No, it's going wrong. Then the point is it's not about it's him because he's, you know, control. It's about my taking shelter of him and that relationship. Because this related, because the other is then it's his fault. You know, it's Paramatma or Brahman or like this. You know what I'm saying? Or, okay, it's him is like this, but then, you know, and I'm controlling this or I'm understanding it. It's all gyan. Right? But so the point is, no, he's beyond that as a person. So as Paramatma and Bhagavan, Brahman, then yes, the material world is being pervaded by him. And he's controlling it and maintaining it. But when we're offering our prayers, it's not to him as Paramatma or to him as Brahman, it's him as Bhagavan. It's separate. Though it's him who's Paramatma and him who's Brahman. As we see the ladies of Hastinapura, then the queens, they're making this point, is that he is what's everything. So they're starting there. Just so you can understand it's different. And then rasa's beyond that. Because the first is that the proper understanding. It's transcendental understanding. Right? But it's not where the taste is. The taste is with the person. Does that make sense? So that's why there's all this technical kind of points. So we know exactly what is the rasa. Because otherwise, we will, from our conditioning, you know, project that it's one thing. And as long as that projection is okay, great, it works. But then sometimes that projection is not okay. Right?
Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, going to be nice. Like that. We don't want anyone to get feel bad.
Positive.
Yes. Sometimes. Occasionally. You know, once in a day of Brahma.
It may occur.
Yeah, so the idea is that you bring this out. Okay, so does this make sense? This is what's being brought out that you don't get in any other scripture. Others will make the point because all these points are going back to the Vedanta Sutra, going back to the Upanishads, going back to the Veda itself. So it's been explained, but it's been explained in such a way that others don't catch it. You know what I'm saying? Some do. Narada Muni caught it. And from that he made the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Right? You know, he explained to Vyasadeva so that he could actually write the Bhagavatam. Right? So it's understood like that, but it comes down from these great personalities, you know, by that association. Because it's not, the mechanics are important, but the mechanics can only be utilized properly by associating with those who are more advanced. By associating with them, they show us how to use the mechanics in the Lord's service, means as a person. You know, and in doing that, we also acknowledge and engage, because we're dealing with the conditioning, the Brahman and Paramatma aspects. But that's not where it ends. Otherwise, why would Krishna point that out? Right? So that's the third verse of the Chaturshloki. Right? Is that he is beyond all this. So that's the whole, that's the idea. Does that make sense? He's simultaneously the Adi Atmak, Adi Daivik, and Adi Bhautik, but he's also as a person beyond that. He's the shelter of this. So here when it talks about Ashraya, then it means that aspect. Does that make sense?
Can we also say that Adi Atmak, Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik can be Brahman, Paramatman, Brahman? In a sense?
I'm not sure. We'd have to just see as this unfolds. See, it's one in doing this, it's that these things may be aspects, but you always have to be very, very careful of catching that as the main perspective. Does that make sense? That's why sometimes, even when we're discussing it, it might appear to be not clear. That's because sometimes on purpose we leave it that way, because otherwise the tendency is we will take a perspective and make it the perspective, which we shouldn't do. Does that make sense? In other words, it's an important element, like we were discussing before, intent. But then it's not that you interpret everything by intent. It's an important aspect in which it must be judged. Right? Does that make sense? But if we just do everything on that, then it, at some point it may have a weakness because there's a different perspective that generally would be used in that situation. Does that make sense? So sometimes that comes up, or, you know, Mataji's always worried about, you know, if the authorities are doing the right thing. So if this is a group of managers, then that would be the main point we'd be discussing, but she's not the manager, so it's not her point. It is an important point, but from her perspective, it's not. Right? She's the adiatmic here. Right? So it's not her business to discuss about the adidaya. Does that make sense?
Because it's not possible to understand anyway.
No, no. Yeah, it's not. You know, especially when you know you bring up the, okay, within this, then you know you do this and that. What's that? You know. So then you know, in choosing the sari, huh? In choosing the titanium carburetor, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, now we got it. Okay, so like that, yes.
Can we say that sometimes we try to establish relationship with Bhagavan, we kind of leave beside Paramatma and Brahman features of him?
That's also we do.
Because in the prayers of the ladies of Hastinapur, they started from Brahman.
That's also because I mentioned because of the element of majesty. Mm-hmm. So we here as in a conditioned state, we will also consider those elements, but as once established in rasa, it's not necessary. Like the residents of Vrindavan, they don't do that, you know, like that. So, and even if they're doing that, they're doing it in a more subtle kind of way, you know, that everything's controlled by him, but it's more of the pastimes that's going on, you know, everything is being, how you say, everybody's working for his pleasure and things, you know, say they'll be directly on the Bhagavan level. But what we're bringing out here is that for us is that if we can catch that and work on that, then it's already accomplished. That's the point, is that without going through all the great grammatical discussions, all the breakdown, these ladies of the palace, they, by the Lord's mercy, understood his position. And they immediately were dealing with the level of Bhagavan and rasa. Right? So that's by his mercy. But it's also, as they point out about the queens, Krishna's queens, is they've already done all these things. Right? So now they've come to that position where it's just the Lord is pleased with what they have done, and therefore now they're in that position. Like that. So if we find we're at that position, great, then it's not technically important of all these technical points. But if we're not, then they're useful. Or, you know, we can say is you know, this and that, or you know, it's how you say, too mechanical. But as long as we catch the point, then you don't need the mechanics. It's just like, let's say, in teaching, I noticed in teaching the math. Okay, or anything. But let's say, yeah, let's just take math for example. You know, since we're talking technically. Keep it boring, isn't it? Right? Okay, now if the let's say there's some formula that's there that you're combining the numbers, right? And by if you catch it, then with one or two examples, you understand it. If you don't, then they'll give you, you know, 5, 10, 20 exercises to work with it until you do catch it. You understand? That's the difference. So point is if by just hearing it in its more simple form you catch it, great. If not, then it's broken down and then you're taken through step by step. So it does become more mechanical. You know? So, yes.
Can we say that by nature some people are more personal and others like it more distant?
Yeah, that's fair. It'll be just, it's just the conditioning. It's not necessarily the position of the soul. It's not necessarily realization. Because just like, let's say, the person is more personal, but then they can't distinguish on who should be more close or not, or who you should take, be more close with or not, then it's conditioning. You know, but if it's personal and they're able to apply that distinction, then you can understand that that's development of that's realization. So, because the realization will be the soul. right? The knowledge, that will be basically, the technicality of the knowledge will be according to the conditioning. Like that. But by the Lord's mercy, we see even someone can go beyond that. You know, therefore the, you know, the prayers, you know, that's it. All I can remember is the Pungulam Gayate Girim, right? The lame can cross the mountain. You know, Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande, Sri Guru, or Lord Chaitanya. There's three of them, one for Lord Chaitanya, one for Krishna. Jaitanya combines them all. The first part's the same. So, yeah. Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande, Sri Guru, Dinatarinam, Paramananda Madhavam, Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. So he's saying the last line of all three, but the first three are the same. You've never heard him say this one?
No.
No? He uses it a lot. Like that. At least maybe in Bengali classes, but I've heard him. That's one of the... Since I can remember, the 70s, he always quotes that. Okay. Okay, so that was all just to... that we are comfortable with all this adiyatmika adi the kanadi boat. Okay. 59.2. This adiyatmika person, the jiva, who identifies himself as the owner of, for example, the visual sense, right? He's going to take the sight. Also assumes the role of the adidaivika person. In this example, the demigod of the sun and the other presiding deities of sight. So you have the thing is the jivas in all these positions. We're taking jiva as generic, then the jivas both in the adiatmic and in the adidaivic. It's not that the same jiva is necessarily. But, of course, whoever is the sun god, you know, then you have that. He has both aspects. But other than that one jiva, then everybody else is... Before the creation, you know, the other okay. Before the creation of the material body, the senses are unable to function, right? Having no place to reside. And so, the different functions of the two purushas, one presuming to activate the senses with consciousness, the other making this activation possible, have not yet appeared. So, until you create the body, you don't actually have the distinction of adiatmic and adidaivic. Right? Because the body is what holds them together. Right? The Upanishad will also point out these things as you have you know, the upper, the lower, and what connects them. Right? The Taittiriya Upanishad gets into this a lot. In the first section. Now what's be quoted here is that made of food, and that's the that's two ones. Okay. It gets into a deeper one in three. Okay. Thus the two remain indistinguishably jivas and nothing more. So they're both just jivas, but as soon as the adibhautik becomes manifest, right, the secondary creation is there. Then you say one is the adidaivik and one is the adiatmik.
Yes.
Right?
And before
that they're just jivas in the mahat. You know. Yes. Yeah, so we're all part of the primordial soup, right? So, yeah, so everybody's just hanging out and digging on the primordial soup there. That, you know, the shuddha sattva, you know, it's all good, right? You know, like that. At that point, it is all good. It's goodness, you know. But the problem, because it's goodness. Well, I mean, you have the thing of Vishuddha Sattva that they're without material conditioning, but the soul, the consciousness is polluted, as we mentioned. So they don't have the trappings of it. But as soon as there is a body, right, as soon as the adibhautik happens, then immediately then everybody takes their place. So whoever belongs as the adidaiva becomes, whoever is the adiatmika becomes.
Like that. Underdog. And
yeah, the top dog.
Yeah, top dog. Yeah.
Yes.
And before the creation is a material...
Yeah, and the sawdust is what's in between. Yeah.
Before the creation is a material body, the senses are existing?
That's in the primary creation. Then you have the blueprints of them, how they work. Right? That's why, like, we'll see is that on these topics, like we're talking very strongly, like this morning, on the feminine nature and how it works in that, because that's already designed in the primary creation. So it's not that when it manifests, it will be any different. There can be a mis... It means the individual can have a misunderstanding of how that applies, but there's no question that because people don't like it, they change it.
Yes.
You know, that's the modern sense. Because things are in externals, not in consciousness. Therefore, you can change it, right? You can burn the library at Alexandria, right? And thereby think you've changed.
Yes.
No, but the point is the consciousness still remains.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So you can deal with the externals, but you can't. So how do you get into that? Yes. So the primary creation, it's there, and that's just the way it is.
Yes.
It's not that it's anything different than that. Now, of course, then there's how much you can appreciate of it, its greatness and its variety. But there's no such thing as it being different. Does that make sense?
Yes.
There just isn't such a thing.
Yes.
So that's why we can say with such strength, you know, some may think impunity, or, you know, like that, because it's just fact.
Yes.
You know, if I say water is wet, you can speak very strongly. No, but, you know, it's such an annoyance, it's always wet, you know, you're sitting there, and if you spill your drink, then it gets all over you, wouldn't it be better if it didn't do that, and so like that, and so, therefore, you know, we make a movement in Parliament that water won't be wet. It doesn't matter. People can talk about it, they can Twitter about it, they can Facebook about it, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be wet. So that's our point, is you can say whatever you like, but it doesn't change. Right? Does that make sense? All you're doing is changing what species you're working with. You know what I'm saying? Like the female dog can rip your leg off. Right? But it's still a female compared to the male dog, who also can rip your leg off. You know what I'm saying?
It would be a nicer cut by the female.
That's there. You can there's some difference you can tell. So that's the whole point, is you can always tell. There's no such thing as not being able to tell. Because it doesn't exist, because that's what it is.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the whole point is it's pointing out, you have the generic, you know, position of the jiva as jiva tattva. Then as you manifest the creation as the adibhautik, then everything, the material elements and their forms and all that, that's the adibhautik. Then you have the placement of the jivas, and then you make the distinction, this one's the demigod, that one's the human. And that's why then Krishna is beyond that, is the ashraya. Does that make sense? That he's separate. Right? Yeah.
Mark, The distinction is then in the primary creation.
The distinction of the position, but in the primary creation, the jivas have an accepted body, so they're still just in mahat. They're just in that vasudeva sattva.
The idea of the jiva and the demigods, it exists as a blueprint.
Yes, as a blueprint. But we're saying is this adibhautik, that's in the secondary creation.
That's physical.
That's physical.
But
until the physical, the point he's making here, the charge he's making, until the physical manifests, there is no distinction between the two jivas.
But the concept.
The concept is, but not in the jiva. It's not that this jiva is a demigod jiva and this jiva is a human jiva.
But
so,
do they function on the primary stage?
No, they don't function. They're only in this stage of vasudeva sattva. So they're just sitting there, you know, and thinking, you know, it's all great.
Right?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're just experiencing that element of just that, you know, transcendence.
I mean, it's a long period.
It's long enough. I mean, Brahma is meditating for 1,000 years, celestial years. You know, so it's a bit longer, you know. But, you know, celestial, you know. Yeah, it's a while. I mean, one of our years is a day. So 360 of our years times 1,000, so 36,000 years, then that's how long he's meditating, you know. But in transcendental time, that's not a long time, you know, since the whole manifestation is 3/4 of a second on transcendental time. So it's, you know, it's just a few moments. But, you know, it was a moment. Right? Jiva had his moment there.
We'll always have them.
There was some Vasudeva Sattva.
We'll always have the Mahatma.
Yes, like that. And then you also have when he breathes in.
Yes.
You know, so you have these stages of completely nothing, and then something is manifest here, meaning just the consciousness is there. And then you have the actual dealing, right?
Yeah.
And then of that, we're asleep half the time. Right? So then it's not actually a lot that we're dealing with that we're conscious. Most of the thing is we're not conscious. Right? Does that make sense? You know, then you have in between bodies and, you know, all that kind of jazz. So it comes out quite a bit less.
Take advantage.
Yes, take advantage. Okay, thus the two, right, say here, so we try again. Before the creation of the material body, right, so that means that we have to be in the primary,
yes.
You know,
yes.
At that time.
Yes.
The senses are unable to function, having no place to reside, and so the different functions of the two Purushas, right, the functions of the demigod and the function of the human, you know, one presuming to activate the senses with consciousness, the other is making the activation possible. Right, so he activates the senses with consciousness. Remember what we were discussing from Shankya, is that the jiva then through the intelligence, then that the consciousness shines off the intelligence like a mirror, that shines onto the sense and the sense object. Therefore, then you're able to see. So you activate with consciousness. But that means you're conscious, you know, but there is no material body, because the subtle body is not enough. You still don't see. Right? Okay. So they have not yet appeared. And the other making this activation possible. In other words, how the two can connect, that the sense and the sense objects can interact. That's the demigod. Right? Have not yet appeared. Thus, the two remain indistinguishably jivas and nothing more. So they're just jivas. They're not demigod jiva, human jiva. Later, the adibhautic person appears, by whom the two other persons become divided into separate entities, the claimed proprietor of the sense and the presiding deity of the sense. Right? Then you get the one jiva enters the human and one enters the demigod, and then the whole process can function.
Who's the adibhautic person?
The body. Means you have an adi, means your body is the adibhauti person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're not the body, so you're the adiatma. Does that make sense? So the demigod, his body is also adibhauti. So that's where the common ground is, why you and the demigod can actually have interaction. It's because you have adibhauti, they have adibhauti, right? So the abhideya, that's the middle ground where the prayojana and the sambandha can meet. Right? Otherwise, sambandha is on its own, the prayojana is on its own. They can meet because of abhideya. Right? Does that make sense? That's why we always talk about the Lord's pastimes. Because the pastimes is where he and his energies meet. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in this connection, the pastimes will be the
adipotic. Well, it will be the facility of the pastimes.
And the bodies will be there.
The forms, the activities, the dham, the situations, all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. But at the same time, you could also look at that. That would be Shankarshan. Because that's how you establish the relationship. And, you know, that's what I'm saying, is that the fun part of these is that if you're describing one aspect, they act in one way, but when you describe another aspect, it switches, because there's only one topic. Krishna.
Wouldn't be that Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma? By whom?
He's creating it, but he's not the bodies. He's still not the earth, water, fire, air, ether that the body's made out of.
But he is the middle term.
No, he's the manager of the middle term. Right? So in that way, you can say he's beyond it, but at the same time, his body is also adibhauti. And only because he has one then so in other words, Krishna starts it, and then after that, then everybody else manages it, because he does it without so much difficulty. But you know, means it takes 33 million demigods to run what he just does by his own desire. Right?
How about Durga? Is she a devotee? The material energy?
No, she is an energy of the Lord, because that is who she is. Maya is Maya. She is that. You understand?
But isn't she?
We're not that.
No. Yeah.
Or we're not this. Okay, she could say she is this.
Okay.
Yeah. We are that. Right? You understand? Mm. The point is in here, you have to be careful not to confuse the terms. Mm. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is that we catch on something that makes sense, but it's not that that's the whole thing.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The creation of the Adibhautik, that's Brahma. The primary creation that the Adibhautik functions on, and that you do have a demigod, and you do have the person, so you have the senses, you have the sense objects, you have the controller of the senses. That is all coming from Krishna. Right? That's in the primary creation, it's established. But it manifests because of the Adibhautik in the secondary. So Brahma's doing that, but he's not the creation. As we say, Krishna is the creation, because what he's creating with is Krishna stuff. Just like, let's say, the engineer, he following the blueprint builds the building, but it's not his bricks and sand and cement. It's the owner of the place. He only can manage them. So that's why Prabhupada calls him the engineer. Right? Because engineers look at blueprints and use ingredients already supplied to them. He didn't make the earth, the water, fire, air, and ether. He just takes those elements that are there, right? Because in the Mahatman, the 24 elements are there. He looks at the blueprint of the primary creation and puts the two together. Right? But he does it through his mind. Right? So he doesn't need a machine. So very sophisticated. Right? So it's subtle. Yeah? Just look at it this way. It'll be so much easier when we get there in Bhagavatam. Okay. Yeah. Thus, the two remain indistinguishable jivas and nothing more. Okay. Later, the Adibhautik person appears. Right? Because as we're talking about jivas as tattva. Right? And then, you know, the Adiatmic and the Adidaitic is tattva. The Adibhautik is also tattva. Right? In other words, it's all the bodies. It's the manifestations of the bodies and the things that are there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that being manifest, then now you can distinguish between the two, the seer and the seen.
Yes.
Or actually, it's the controller of seeing and who sees. Yes. Because the seer is actually the Lord.
Yes.
Okay. Later, the Adibhautik person appears, by whom the other two persons become divided into separate entities. The claimed proprietor of the sense and the deity and the presiding deity of the sense. Right, so the claimed proprietor is the Adiatmic, and the presiding deity is the Adidaitic. This Adibhautik person is the visible body, right? Represented by the eyeball. So in this case, because we took sense of sight, so the Adibhautik person is the eyeball, right? If you're taking touch, then the Adidaivika person is the skin, right? You know, if it's taste, the Adidaivika person will be the tongue, right? And the other physical sense organs, right? He is regarded as a person in that he is an upadi of the jiva, as stated in the Shruti text. This person is made of food and bodily fluids, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1. Yeah, you know, so it's a bit more intellectual. Therefore, yeah. The physicist can say, hey, you know. I say, what would you say? I guess there must be some terms, you know, where you're taking various fluids and bringing them into something, and then by that they'll become transformed in part of, you know, there's probably some technical term. So then they'll, you know, they'll say that, meaning, you know, to the other physicists, do you want to go out and get a snack?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that. So, you know, for them, it's fun.
And right? They do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for them, that's fun. So these sages that work simply on the Upanishads and that, they can talk on this level. And it's normal. Right?
Nobody gets the joke.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Okay. So he's regarded as a person, not that it's another entity, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like your arm then starts, you know, doing something weird, you know, like that. It's a good theme, but whatever, it doesn't work. It's because it's an upadhi to the person. The real person is the soul, right? And so the soul thinks, I am human, so that body that you call human, that you say I am, that you're projecting your own consciousness into, therefore it is called the adibhautika person. And just like the demigod, he thinks I am this body, right? And so therefore he projects his consciousness into the body, and it's an upadhi for the soul. That's why we're calling it a person, right? Well, who are you?
Interesting question according to that.
Yes. Okay, but let's just take the general social sense. Who are you?
Female.
Okay, so, but is that the soul?
No.
So that's the projected consciousness into the particular form that's there.
So that's
so therefore, you think you're the body, right? So that thinking of that you're the body, that's the adibhautika. But the actual thing is, you're the adiatmic, you're the soul, you're not the body. So when we say you're not that body, we're saying you are the adiatmic, you're not the adibhautik. But you think you're the adibhautik, so that's why we deal with you as the adibhautik. Does that make sense? So everybody is like that. So in this case, why it's being brought out like this, because the demigod also thinks he's the body, so he thinks I'm the adibhautik. Right? So every living entity, the tree, you know, the grass, the bug, they all think I'm the adibhautik. Because before that, they were just jivas in mahat. You know, you don't have any specific designated position. You know, it's not that they're all floating around there, hey, aren't you the guy who was, you know... Yeah, wow, you remembered that. That was, you know, a thousand lifetimes ago. Wow, you know. Yeah, well, you know, no conditioning, so it's easy to, you know, no, that doesn't go on.
So if you get to the adiatma, means you...
Then that means you're off the bodily platform, then you're technically liberated. Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's just a very technical way of saying we're not this body. Right? But you can see is because of that, we still make this mistake because we think, well, this is me, then that's them. No, but all of this is the same adibhautika, just we identify with this part of the adibhautika. Mm. This is my adibhautika, not your adibhautika.
A controller and enjoyer wouldn't be adidaivik?
No, it's the presiding deity.
No, but the idea...
That, then, you means who's doing it, both are. That's why there's the point that there's no difference between these two, but there is a difference. Oh. Yeah, you understand? That's what I was opening, is that there's not so much... There is a difference in position once they're placed there, but before that, there's no difference. And what places them there is the adibhautik, which is one person. You know what I'm saying? It's still made of the same thing. So here's presiding deity and control, controller and control. The other is Purusha, right? That's how you would look at that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's the same thing, but when the adiatmika is thinking I'm the controller and enjoyer, then you call that position as the Purusha. Does that make sense? So that's why we were saying before, we change terms. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why we don't get attached to one particular term in that way. Because it works in its general area. But when it gets more specific, it takes on other qualities. Like here, it's taking on the controller and enjoyer and that Purusha Bhav and everything like that. Yeah. So it's slightly a different perspective. So now we use that terminology. But the one we're applying it to is that adiatmika. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the idea, is that to be able to... appreciate all the terms, their definitions, but also the positions that they best work in. Does that make sense? You know, so it's means, in other words, we have these skills, this understanding whatever is the area of our skills. That's why we have the skill and someone else doesn't, because we can understand the difference. Does that make sense? So now we're just learning something new that we've never done before, which is transcendence. You know what I'm saying? We've done this technically, you know, grammatically. We've all been scholars. We've all been this. We've been everybody. Whatever there is in the earth, we've all done it. We've all been Brihaspati. We've been Sukracharya. We've been the big pundit. We've been everything. But the point is we never did it from the point of the Bhagavat perspective about the person that's beyond. So it comes up to a point, and then that point of, you know, how that works at the fundamental level, that's where it falls apart. We've never gotten into that. So this is, makes it clear, so we understand this is how we're working, the creation's working, then God's beyond that. Is that okay? Does that work better?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. It's just, you give it time, it starts to work.
How much time?
Whatever's required.
We have time. Huh? We have time.
Yeah. Basically, we want to be past all this when we finish the ninth canto. Like that.
5.5 years.
Yeah.
Oh. Four.
Sometime.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments. How does the sun deity instill action in the senses of the jiva who identifies with the senses? So the jiva. So now when they're talking jiva and demigod, now we mean the jiva in the body. That's the adiatmic, right? When we were talking before in the primary creation, we're taking jiva as jiva tattva. They're just the okay. So he identifies with the senses. So how does the demigod actually control those senses? Before the creation of the body, the senses have no ability to act because they have no support. Right? You mean, yeah, unless it has a place, it doesn't work. Like the blender doesn't work in space. It has to sit on the counter. Right? It has to be, you know, does that make sense? Right? And if there is no blender, there's the concept of a blender. Right? So there is no blender, there is no counter, there is no person to operate it, there's no electricity. Right, but the concept is there, you know, so it can't work. Right? For instance, the eye, which is subtle, does not have the eyeball. Right. So, in other words, there's a concept of the eye that sees, but there's no eyeball to see with. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. The jiva exists without differentiation because the functions of the senses, contacting objects which belong to the sense, and instigating the senses, which is caused by the sense deity, karanabdhimani, have not manifested because of lack of a gross body. Right? So the jivas exist, there's no differentiation between the various jivas. I mean, they exist as 10,000 tip of the hair, but you don't give an identity. Here's Indra jiva, and here's, you know, this king jiva, and here's the dog jiva, like that. You don't do that, right? Because it's not manifest. That this means that before the creation of the body, the senses and the devatas exist along with the jiva, right? So they're there in the primary, but it's just not manifest, right? Since they do not function, they are included in the jiva, right? So they're just, you know, it's all part of the jiva. So because then when we're saying all this is glanced into the Mahavishnu's glance, the jivas go, the false ego and time. Right? That which goes in. So all this concept, the adiatmic, adi-daivic, adi-bhokta, that's all included in the jiva. Because they're the ones that will take these positions. But it's all Krishna's potency. Right?
Here's jiva tattva. All the jivas means included in the jiva?
Yeah. Exist. Okay. Exist along with, since they don't, they're included in the jiva. Right? You have the element, they're included in the jiva because the jiva by nature can see and do all those things in their spiritual body, but they don't have a spiritual body, so it's there. So some are controlling, some are controlled. So that principle is there in the jiva, right? But it's not manifest until the bodies are there. The same time as that potency of controller controlled and that in between, that's
the Lord himself. Mm-hmm. It's still this potency. Because even the jivas are doing it still by the higher potency. We're always going to work under a higher potency. Mm-hmm. Right? So the internal potency will be controlling it. Or now the external potency is controlling it. Right? So now, then how you say, the body is manifest through the Adi Bhautik, is therefore made from matter. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to worry about all that. It's made from internal potency. Does that make sense? So everything's, the Dham is internal potency. Krishna's form is internal potency. So everybody's manifest through internal potency. Same principle. Because Krishna is everything. So he manifests in this particular size that you can see him. That's his internal potency. Because he's that and he's everything. You know, the jivas went 10,000 to the tip of the hair, but he's got a body big enough that he can interact with Krishna. You understand? So these things are going on. On that side, it's not as important. Because once one gets to that side, then it's about relationship, rasa. That's why, for us, this sambhat sandini vladini is only applied here, so we can distinguish. Because otherwise, we think it's ourselves. But then it's shown how it's the Lord and everything. But once you cross into the relationship with the Lord in pastimes, no one distinguishes these things. Right? They don't go, oh, Radharani Sladini and Yoga Maya is, you know, Samvit, and, you know, like, they don't deal with that kind of, like, that kind of, you know what I'm saying? It just doesn't work. It's just, here's all the associates of the Lord. So you don't, here we, to make distinctions, we may do that. Does that make sense? So that's for us. Since they do not function, they are included in the jiva. When the body appears, they differentiate from the jiva with their functions. That is described. So when the body appears, then you see the demigod, you see the senses, you know, you see the sense objects, the individuality of the souls. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because it means they're always an individual, but when they're in the Brahman state, you can't appreciate the individuality.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But as soon as the creation is there, then they all have forms, the Adiya Bhautika form. So therefore, then you can appreciate the individuality. So all that is contained within, because one jiva will be the demigod, one jiva will be the controlled entity. Right? Does that make sense? And then others, then who also, other entities who are, you can see. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as the body appears according to the desire of the living entity.
Yes, according to the desire. Does that make sense? So, because that means it's going on from before.
Yes.
So that's why the term is used, anadi. Right?
Yes.
Because when that started, no one can say. We know that when it starts, it once starts as Brahma.
Yes.
You understand? So the principle that it's always been there, that never didn't start. No, it had to have started, because the first appearance within the material world, the first Adi Bhautika form, body, is Brahma. Right? And then Brahma, because he deals with the whole creation, then you can get all kinds of weird desires. Right? So from that you could get realized, go back to Godhead. So you could take one birth.
Yes.
Like that. But you know, that we're still here is indication that it went a few beyond that. Right? Like that. So generally it's Brahma, Prajapatis, great sages, and then after that it's potpourri.
Potpourri.
Huh?
Potpourri.
Potpourri.
Yes.
Potpourri. Potpourri. Okay. Yes, that sounds a whole lot better.
Change the
Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj,
that's the whole thing. They can make mundane sounds so good. You know, yeah, I said they have this whole thing. Oh, what is it? You know, snails in, you know, how you say, how you say, with mushrooms, you know. It sounds so good. Who wants to eat that? Yes.
Maharaj, then when jiva appears in the material world, it goes from all these forms like Brahma,
all of it. It's everything. That's why we're here. So generally it's understood, when you come to Krishna consciousness, you've been through all those species. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, otherwise, then, you know, there'd be something left out. But you've tried it all. So that's why you can be convinced that there is nothing because you've also already done it all.
Yes.
Right? It's been done. Because otherwise you can think, well, what about this? Though we may have our preferences and attachments. You know, so whatever is there. So that's the whole point. It's that then from the Mahat, because the jivas that are glanced in, then they have that mundane consciousness. Right? That means that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that would have to be why it is. As you can say, is the adiatmic element is there, but that's not manifest until the adibhautik is. You can't define who's adiatmic and who's daididaitic until adibhautik is manifest, right? But he still has this control and enjoyer mentality before that. So that's the Purusha Bhav, right? So in the Mahat, all those living entities have the Purusha Bhav.
That's all they have.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but it's enough.
Yes.
What more do you need?
So that's what distinguishes one from another.
No, even just as a jiva, they're distinguished. But what distinguishes them, distinguishes is not at that point, but what form they'll get based on that Purusha Bhav. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'm saying they have a specific, so therefore one becomes the demigod, one becomes the human. Right. Does that make sense? Or whatever's control. The demigod controls all the other living entities. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like you're the sun. Let's say the tree, it doesn't technically see, but it can perceive the sun. Right? And so in this way, it goes around. Like you see the tree is growing, and then when it perceives there's something in the way, it moves around it. Mm-hmm. So Prabhupada said, that's intelligence. So you can see the tree has intelligence. Otherwise, why did it move? It's slow. You know, but it does move. You know, that's the whole point. So there is some distinction. And so it's by the sun. You know, so they have their own method. When there is no physical body, there is no distinction between the senses and the presiding deities. When the body comes into existence, the senses come and sit in it, and their respective presiding deities take charge of them. At that time, the activities of the presiding deities can be distinctly perceived. The eyes and nose that we see in the physical body are not the senses. They are the seats for the senses, which are subtle in their composition. At the time of death, the visible nose and eyes may remain, but the senses situated in them are carried away by the soul along with the mind. Right, so that's why, as you change the kind of sense, how you want to apply your sense, that's why your next body will have that changed form. Mm-hmm. Is that something? Yeah. So that's the... Okay. In the next section, Srila Jiva Goswami gives the explanation of the second of the two Bhagavatam verses, 2.10.9.
When you get a body, is that actually a result of your upadis?
No, the body is the upadi. Yeah, it means it could be the subtle aspect of how you identify. Yes, how you identify. So that's why it's more important to give up the attitude of the upadi as opposed to the particular of the body.
Yeah.
Right? In the beginning, we take it that giving up the particular manifestation of the upadi is what's important. Right? Like you know, the general idea is you can't be renounced if you're a grihastha. Right? Because you can see upadi, the manifestation of upadi. But the actual upadi is how you identify, if you identify with it or not.
Yes.
Does that make
yes.
sense? You know, so therefore on the neophyte platform there you have this communal difference between, you know, the different varnas and ashrams and all those things. But actually as it advances then those go away. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why. But you start with that. Yes. In other words, if by controlling the upadis, the external, you know the adi how you say bhautik aspect. Therefore, the adiatmic gets the understanding and then starts to give them up. That's what you want. But if they just do though, become expert at the adibhautik aspect, but don't actually make any, there's no realization. Then we'll say that's a waste of time. That's why just cultivating good qualities is a waste of time, because who got the good qualities? The adibhautik.
Yes.
yes.
Not the adhyatmic person. So devotional service is the only thing where the adhyatmic person gets the qualities. But when they have those qualities, we don't call them we call them the devotee.
Yes.
Right? Because then the devotee uses the adhibhautik. So now the body becomes connected with the soul, rather than the soul connected with the body. Yeah. Right? Like with Bhishma Dev, the body is respected because of its connection with that particular soul. Right? But in the material world, we take that the soul is the body, so that's why that we lament the body.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
So we can say in the material world we lament for adhibhautik instead of for adhyatmik.
Yes, because there is no lamentation for adhyatmik. You know, unless it's on the devotional platform by a real, how you say, association. So we, the Vaishnavas associate the loss of that soul, but that soul is manifest to us through the adhibhautik, so we appreciate it. So therefore we respect that adhibhautik aspect. Right? Even on the mundane platform where the people think they're the adhibhautik, but the adhibhautik then is the potencies of the Lord. And then there's levels of qualification of those adhibhautik potencies. Right? Therefore, you know, someone with more wealth is more respected than someone with less, or someone with more power and less, or more beauty, or more fame, or any of the opulences that's more. Because that's coming from the Lord, because that adhibhautika body functions by the Lord's potency. So that's being controlled by the adhidaiva. Right? So that's why the demigods represent the Lord. Right? They're the arms of the universal form. Does that make sense? So you have both. That's the point of these subtleties. So you can make the distinction and see how the same thing has both of these aspects. Because otherwise it overlaps. Why is it that when the we're saying that when the Karmi dies and everybody's crying that they're fools, but then when the Vaishnav dies and then but they're crying, but then why aren't they fools? So you have to be able. That's what all this does. Is it shows technically. You know what I'm saying? Because you can say, no, but they're devotees, they're not karmi, so it's like this and that. But so as long as someone is able to appreciate that, if they have the piety, then you don't have to discuss more. But if they don't, then this will break it down so they can. Right? Because once it's caught, you can't explain this, you know, to anyone. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Then you can show that there's a difference. Because otherwise you can say, you know, it means even for the materialist, yes, the saintly person, you know, in whatever their line is the body is what is the saintliness is being projected through. Right? In the ordinary person, then it's not a matter of saintliness, it's just your attachments and your relationships and all that that the body is the medium for. Does that make sense? Yes. Yeah, so therefore then there's you can see that there's a difference in the lamentation between the two. Right? So therefore, in the one, only family and friends come. In the saintly person, a wide range of people who have no connection to each other come. Is that so? Even on the mundane, they do it, though they don't understand why. Okay. So the second of the Bhagavatam verses, summary of text 60. Srila Jiva Goswami shows here that except for the Lord, none can be the ashraya, the tenth topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Superficially, the Jiva, along with the presiding deities, appear to be the ashraya. This is true in one sense, right, on this lower mechanics of the material world. The Jiva, or the conditioned soul, is the ashraya for the gross body, and the presiding deities are the ashraya for the senses. But none of them can be considered ashraya independent of the other. So he's ashraya that he has no support. He is the support. So he is the ashraya. But in this case, then, the jivas are the ashraya of that particular aspect. Does that make sense? Right. So then you get, how you say, the conditions for the gross body. In other words, why is that gross body there with that jiva? Because right? That's how they are identifying. That's how they see their senses. They want to enjoy in a certain way with their senses. Because In other words, we see here there's also this interesting element, is that your only contact with the outside world is the senses.
Yes.
That's why we put so much emphasis on engaging the senses in the Lord's service. The Mayavadis always talk about, no, getting rid of the senses.
Yes.
They think that there's another way they're going to see.
Yes.
It doesn't exist. That's why it's illusion, their whole concept.
Yes.
Right? Because the point is our interaction is through the senses. The senses require a body. Does that make sense? So that's why our whole philosophy is about this engaging the senses. Nice. Does that make sense? But we have to be able to distinguish. So, because of the kind of enjoyment the living entity wants to do as his thinking, I'm the controller and enjoyer, right? Then he gets that particular body that can be the shelter of those senses. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, the jiva is the shelter of the body.
Yes.
But the demigod is the shelter of the sense, because that's the potency that makes it run.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you have a particular thing, who's going to manage it? You know what I'm saying? You know, if you have an elephant nose, who's managing that? Right? It's got 50,000 muscles. You know, definitely that jiva's not doing it, right? The demigod's doing it. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's more technical, right? You know, just a regular old, you know, like a hole in the front of the face, then not a whole lot of, you know, like, let's say a bug's nose, okay? So then not so much of a management, but, you know, an elephant nose, now that would be serious management, you know?
Yeah.
Like that. Okay. But none of them can be considered ashraya independent of the others, right? Because each one of those isn't independent of the others. Because if you don't have a body, then what does it mean being a demigod? And if there's no demigod, what does it mean having a body?
Yes.
Right? But both of them, the Lord is independent from both of them.
Yes.
His senses function without any of them. His body is there without any of them. He didn't have to go through the creation process to get a body. Right? Does that make sense?
No.
Yes.
And there is a need to respect and appreciate the demigod.
Yes.
For their service.
Yes. But only in connection with the Lord. If it goes outside of that, then that becomes a waste of time. Then it becomes simply an adibhautic consideration.
Yes.
Right? It's not actually adidaivic.
Yes.
You know, those who are worshiping the demigod, give me this, give me that. It's actually more on the adibhautic level.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Adidaivic is that they are the one controlling the sense, and that they are doing that on behalf of the Lord.
Yes.
So the potency comes from the Lord, they're just managing it.
Yes.
You know, it's like the chauffeur. It's not his car, he just manages it.
Yes.
Like that. Text 60. The words in the absence of any one of these indicate that there are a number of ashrayas, each dependent on one another. Right, because in the before it said, when one of them's missing, the others can't function.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Thus, for example, without a visible object, the sense whose existence is inferred by its perception of that object is not manifested. Right? So, if there's nothing to look at, then the position of the sense is not manifest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, this way, you have this whole point of, in the absence of any one of these. Right. If you're in a pitch black room, there's nothing to see.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the eyes don't function. Like that.
If you're seeing nothing, you're not seeing.
Hmm?
Can you say, if you're seeing nothing, you're not seeing? Is that what is meant?
If you're seeing nothing.
I mean, seeing is dependent on seeing something.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Yeah, you're saying about the elephant trunk. How does it actually work when the demigods here see this picture where the...
There's just more strings.
Yeah. How does it...
They're demigods. They're empowered to do it. Matali drives a chariot with 10,000 horses. How do you do that? One guy, 10,000 horses. So they have special power.
They actually go into the senses, or
No, they just, they're in charge of them. They have the power to control them. We'll get into that later. That's part of creation. Okay? In other words, be careful. In other words, try to understand the example. Don't get distracted by the example. Right? Yes. That's what the first 3 years were for, getting distracted by the example.
Right?
Yes.
If we talk about us and the demigods, we become kind of very conditioned. So they are less conditioned? They can function.
No, they're just as conditioned. Just their condition in the mode of goodness.
So they still perform, doesn't matter what. It's like we say that the sun always rises.
Because their mode of goodness means you're dutiful. You have a job, you do it. Because the point is they are, you know, generally speaking, aware that their potencies come from the Lord. So their position. So if they don't do their job, then they gotta, you know, who's the boss? That's why the Bhagavatam then will say is out of fear of the Supreme, that's why the sun rises, the wind blows, the seasons change, all that. Because if it wasn't, they'd just be up there enjoying themselves, having a party. You know? But, you know, because in the morning you have to get in the chariot and then take the sun. It means he doesn't. Otherwise, no, they'd be partying.
Wouldn't they be in conflict?
That would also come up, you know, like that. But, you know, the whole point is that, you know, that's why, because the Lord is there, everything works perfectly. You remove the element of the Lord, so this atheistic thing, that just creates chaos. That's the modern society, because God's not the reason for things going on, therefore there's chaos. Because if it's about enjoying your senses, then everybody wants to do that. So why your senses? That's what Prabhupada says. It's worked out that a few people's senses are actually taken care of. And then everybody else is engaged in the mechanics or the machinery that gets them their sense gratification. Now, in doing that, they've worked out over so many thousands of years, you know, I mean, with the, you know, the how you say, the yeah, the slap in the face of their, you know, absolute dictatorial control of like Magna Carta. You know, that, you know, they've worked it out is that we'll get what we want if we give them something of what they want. Right? So you only give them enough that they keep working. If you give too much, they stop working. If you give too less, they riot. So therefore you have to keep that balance. You know, do that for hundreds of years, you become good at it. You know what I'm saying? But it's still the same thing. There's no one's... It's not...
It's not working.
Yeah. So going back to... So those in the mode of goodness are dutiful. Therefore, they'll do it. Like if we were put there, then, you know, we would, you know, you want to sleep in. You know what I'm saying? You know, so then it's not going to work out. You know. Can you imagine one day the sun comes up at 6... One day is, you know, it's been, you know, up all night, so let's get this over with, and then I'll go to sleep. Then it comes up at 2 in the morning. Then the next day it comes up at 12. You know, that would be a little freaky. Right? Yeah, right.
Yeah. We need some more training.
Yeah. So that's why only the demigods who are submissive to the Lord... They are managing it, not the demons. That's why the asuras, though they're both materialists, but one is willing to follow the laws, Lord's orders, the other is not. That's why, even though the demigod, the demons can have an equivalent of administrative skill to run the universe. Like Bali Maharaj took over, it wasn't said that he did a bad job of it. Right? It never says, it never indicates. In fact, he'll be the Indra, I think, not the next one, I think the one after. Or he'll be the next, I'm not sure. It's one of these up and coming. Right? So, but he did a fine job of it. But the problem is they're not supposed to be doing it because they're not doing it on behalf of the Lord, and the demigods represent. That makes sense. So that's the thing. So that means demigods are only devotees. Right? But neophyte devotees. Because if they were madhyamas, why would they take birth as a demigod? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because serious practicing devotees generally come back as devotees. Right? If there's a little weakness there, then you end up as a demigod. Does that make sense?
And that probably sounds attractive to the neophyte.
It can, but if you want to waste your time up there, because there's not going to be any. All it is the same thing on a better level. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the guys are in the slum, right? But, you know, you're going down the road and that notice that, you know, your neighbor, you know, found a new worn-out tire and it's on his roof. So now the plastic on his roof will stay down that much better than on your roof. So now you're jealous. Right? So the point is, but then you go into the, you know, lower middle class, you still have the same thing. You know, the guy, you know, has a power mower instead of, you know, doing it by hand. You know, and then you go into the middle class and this guy has one of those ones you ride around. You know. And then you go up to the next one up is they have a guy that rides it around for them. You know. You know what I'm saying? So there's always going to be something. It doesn't matter who you are, there's always someone above you. So it's just the same old, so it's not any better. You know, but by going there, hopefully one figures it out. So therefore the demigods are waiting in line to take birth in the families of devotees. Right? Because they figured it out.
They have a long line.
Hmm?
So
there's
3 million, it's a long line.
Yeah, it's a long line.
We have to make some devotees.
That, you don't worry about that kind of jazz. That's already been taken care of. I think that question came up, the prophet says. So when you give birth to a child and you're a devotee, so then you get the credit for producing devotees. Says, no, not until they're 16 and they're devotee on their own decision. Then you get the credit. Otherwise, you know, before that, how you say, 15 years, 363 days, or 64 days, that's preliminary to you getting the credit. And so, now, take 15 years, 364 days, you know, and then how many hours a day go into a kid?
365 days in a leap year.
Yeah, okay, depending on where it falls. But, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, the Vedic uses 360, so you don't have to worry about it. So then, take that, then how many hours a day? When they're young, it's 24. You know, as you get older, it gets a little less. You average it out, many hours a day. If you took that much and spent it preaching, how many devotees you'd make?
Probably more.
Yeah, probably.
Or you wouldn't be very good at it.
Good chance a few more, right? So that's why it is engaging the conditioning, and because the living entities are still conditioned, therefore it's a valuable service. But it's not that, yes, we're making devotees. That's not the whole point. No, you're engaging your propensity in the Lord's service, and it comes out, you know, nice, because then everybody becomes devotees. Right, so it works out. It works out nice.
So I stay suffering. So I stay suffering.
Yes. And without the sense and the seer, there is no presiding deity such as the sun god. So unless you're seeing in that, what's the point? What does he do? Nobody's seeing. There's nothing that needs sunlight. Then what does he do? To be known, okay. There's no presiding deity to be known by inference from the activity of the sense. Right?
Yes.
Moreover, without the presiding deity, the sense does not function, and without the functioning of that sense, nothing becomes an object in sight. Right. So each one, the living entity, unless he has the body, then there's no meaning place for the sense or for the demigod to control. Right, the demigod is, if the sense is not functioning, then there's no meaning of the demigod. Right? So does that make sense? And it's also then the body, then what is its point? The demigod is there, you know, but then he controls the others, in a sense. So even the sense is even considered here. Right? Because if it's not functioning, then what's the meaning of the others? So each one, it has to be, in the absence of any one of these. So that's the...
Yes.
So the point is therefore Krishna is the only ashraya.
Yes.
In this way, in the absence of any one of these, we do not perceive the others. But in that situation of mutual dependence, he who sees all three by direct visual perception, who knows them as their constant witness, is the super soul, their ashray. So he always sees the three, whether they're actually functioning or not.
Yes.
And he is their ashray. He's where that whole concept comes from. Therefore, when he sees, then everyone sees.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? So this whole, as Pankajangi pointed out yesterday, this whole very difficult point is all just to establish that it's the Lord.
Yes.
And no, he's the shelter of everything. But just so that we know, because like in the beginning when we said, in the absence of any one of these, we do not perceive the others. And in the beginning when we started the classes, huh, what do you mean? You understand? So by discussing it, you know, for this long, then, okay, now it makes sense. And so now we can say, okay, now we understand how he's the ashraya of these. Because then the question came up, but isn't everything the ashraya? And that's the point. Everything is the ashraya of the other thing. That's why they're independent. They're dependent on each other. But having understood how that all works, he's the one that sees all these, whether the others are being seen or not. He's the independent one.
Yes.
Is that something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Chaitanya Gaura Prema.